Well, good evening, everyone. This is Chair Rena Moran. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the House Ways and Means Committee to order. Ms. Sparkman, please take the roll for attendance.
Chair Moran?
Present.
Moran, present. Vice Chair Olson?
Present.
Olson, present. Representative Garofalo?
Present.
Garofalo, present. Representative Albright?
Present.
Albright, present. Representative Becker Finn?
Present.
Becker Finn, present. Representative Bernardi?
Present.
Bernardi, present. Representative Eklund?
Present.
Eklund, present. Representative Hansen?
Present.
Hansen, present. Representative Hassan, excused. Representative Hertas? Representative Hertas? Representative Hornstein?
Present.
Hornstein, present. Representative Johnson?
I'm very
present.
Johnson, present. Representative Kreisha?
Present.
Kreisha, present. Representative Liebling? Representative Liebling? Representative Lilly?
Lilly, present.
Lilly, present. Representative Mariani?
Mariani, present.
Mariani, present. Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, present.
Marquardt, present. Representative Miller?
Miller, present.
Miller, present. Representative Nash?
Nash, present.
Nash, present. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, present.
Nelson, present. Representative Noor?
Noor, present.
Noor, present. Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, present.
O'Neill, present. Representative Pulowski?
Pulowski, present.
Pulowski, present. Representative Petersburg?
Present.
Petersburg, present. Representative Pinto?
Present.
Pinto, present. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, present.
Schumacher, present. Representative Schultz?
Present.
Schultz, present. Representative Scott, excused. Representative Sundin?
Present.
Sundin, present. Representative Hertas?
Hertas, present.
Hertas, present. Representative Liebling?
Present.
Liebling, present. That concludes the roll. There is a quorum present.
Okay, a quorum is present. So our first agenda item is approval of the minutes from our hearing on Monday, March the 8th. The minutes were included in the hearing documents emailed to you by the committee staff. Are there any questions or corrections on the minutes? If not, the chair will entertain a motion to approve.
So moved, Madam Chair.
So Representative Olson moves approval of the minutes for March the 8th, 2021. Would you please unmute briefly for a voice vote? Just one moment. All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
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 All opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. So, well, members, we have one bill on the agenda tonight, which is House File 1064, who is authored by Representative Daphne. There was an email from Mr. McCall with the most updated version of the documents for this bill that was sent to members at 1:47 today. So please be sure you are referencing those materials for this discussion. So the chair will move that House File 1064 be recommended for placement on the general register. Chair Daphne, welcome to the committee. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to present House File 1064 this evening. House File 1064 proposes $104.489 million in, importantly for this committee, fiscal year 21 dollars to meet the immediate needs identified by teachers, families, and school leaders to lead our communities out of the pandemic's impact on education. We've heard from school districts across the state that they are challenged by sharp student enrollment drops related to the pandemic. We proposed $26 million in aid to those districts to help them manage their costs and stabilize programs. We've heard from parents the power of community and the need for young people to again get out and explore. We include $27 million in grants for after-school learning, field trips, and neighborhood programs to embrace those opportunities for informal learning and opportunities for social-emotional growth, including jump-starting full-service community school programs for the fall. Knowing that this has been a difficult year for many students and for staff, we include $14.25 million for targeted individual tutoring for younger students and summer college transition classes for recent high school graduates. Knowing that mental health concerns have become paramount for both students and staff, we include $7 million in mental health supports. And recognizing that some students were uniquely hard hit by the pandemic and its impact on schools, we include funding to extend special education transition services for eligible students by 1 year for those students who otherwise would be aging out. And lastly, Madam Chair, we can't forget the little ones. So we provide $20 million in summer preschool programs to prepare next fall's kindergartners for school. This is a preschool to career package that needs to move now, Madam Chair. Schools need certainty and budget projections to plan from. Families need to know now what opportunities will be available to their children to learn and grow this summer. And some of these elements have been introduced as far back as last July. It's time to act. Madam Chair, if I may, I'd like to ask Ms. Adrians from House Fiscal Staff to walk through the spreadsheet for the committee.
Yes, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I believe you all have the tracking sheet in front of you, and I'm just going to reference the numbers, and then I believe Ms. Farah and Mr. Strom are going to walk through the bill possibly with a little bit more detail. So this is the tracking sheet for the first engrossment of House File 1064. I just want to point out one more thing. In the tracking for the overall education committee, we have these headings, like it says general education, education excellence, special education, and so forth. And those don't have anything to do with the bill in front of us. That's just how I typically categorize it in my spreadsheet. So my apologies if that's a little bit confusing, but so just that you can ignore those headings. So in the bill, on the first line, this is an appropriation for declining enrollment. And this was a provision that was also in the governor's recommendations. And the amount, I just want to point out, in the governor's recommendations was a little bit lower. It was $22.5 million in fiscal year 21. And here it's just over $26 million. And the reason for that is this is an update for the February forecast numbers. So the cost of this provision is a little bit more expensive at this point. And there's a payment in fiscal year 22 as well. The entitlement aid that goes out in the formula, it gets split between, it's 90% in the first year, and then 10% is the cleanup, we call it the cleanup payment, in the second year. And so that's why there are two payments for this provision. There is $5 million in the bill for after-school community learning grants. And one more thing I should point out, all of the grants that I'm going to describe, these are all one-time, and they are available for use until the end of fiscal year 22. So, as I said, there's $5 million in the bill for after-school community learning grants. There is another $5 million in the bill for community partnerships. This one was a governor's recommendation as well. There is $10 million in the bill for field trips and learning opportunities. This was a governor's recommendation. There is $2 million for full service community schools. There is $5 million for neighborhood programs, a governor's recommendation. There is $6 million for a program that's summer college for high school graduates. That was a governor's recommendation as well. And then there are three tutoring related programs. So there's funding for Math Corps, that's $3 million. There's $2 million for Reading Corps, that program. And then for the tutoring services, which was also a governor's recommendation, that appropriation would be $3.25 million. There is a transition program in the bill, and the amount for that is, it doesn't show up until the fiscal year 23 and 24. Special ed payments are delayed a bit longer, or they're delayed in terms of when the cost occurs for the state. And so that's $24,000 total in those 2 years. And then there is $1 million for mental health and well-being supports. Both of these mental health programs were in the governor's recommendations as well. And then the school-linked mental health program is, it's $6 million and $11,000. And then there's a reduction in the cost of the program because of federal financial participation. So that's why there's that $11,000 reduction just below the school-linked mental health. Those two are tied together. And that program, it would be transferred from the Department of Education over to the Department of Human Services. That's the agency that would administer the program. And then, as Chair Dabney referenced, there's an early education provision. This was also a governor's recommendation. It's $20 million for summer preschool for 4 and 5 year olds. And then there is a funding increase for the adult basic education formula, and that's that was a governor's recommendation as well. So the total spending, Madam Chair, for this bill in fiscal year 21 is just under $105 million. And then just below that, I want to point out that we have, I listed, just for reference, the governor made a recommendation for some federal funds to expand the summer programming as well. And that was $57.5 million. And that's it, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much, Ms. Adrian. Do we have other staff who would like to walk us through a portion of this?
Madam Chair, members, this is Tim Strawn from House Research. Very quickly, I'll comment on Article 1, Section 1, and then on the federal funds in Article 2. Very quickly, Article 1, Section 1 is the declining pupil aid. There's a printout, a district-by-district printout in your packets that shows the revenue distribution to each school district under that provision. There's about $29 million of aid entitlement, as Ms. Adrian's pointed out. And we're happy to answer questions later about that, but you can see the flow to each of the individual school districts under that program. Ms. Parra is gonna address the next couple of sections, and then I'll talk just briefly about the federal funds provisions.
Right, thank you so much, Mrs. Strom. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And I'll start with Article 1, Section 2, which relates to students with disabilities. Subdivision 1 authorizes a school district to provide services required by the student's individualized education program at the student's home and allows those services to qualify for funding under the state special education funding laws. Subdivision 2 requires a school district to consider how a student's disability may affect the student's ability to engage in distance instruction when determining whether to refer the student for truancy programs or whether to refer, to report the student for educational neglect. Subdivision 3 requires a school district to allow a student who's participating in a transition program. Those programs are normally for students ages 18 to 21. So if the student missed employment, job training, or life skills training during the 2021 school year, that student would be allowed to participate in the program during the 2021-2022 school year, even if the student would have otherwise aged out. Then in Section 3, Madam Chair members, we have the appropriations. Ms. Adrian's walked you through the amounts. I'm just going to give you a brief overview of what those grant amounts are for. The community partnerships, those are for school districts, charter schools, intermediate school districts, and cooperative units to use for summer mentoring or tutoring for students. And the recipients would have to partner with community businesses and organizations. The tutoring grants, those are for school districts, charter schools, intermediate school districts, and cooperative units to expand access to tutoring and other wraparound services for children in kindergarten through grade 12 over the summer. And those funds can also be used for mental health services and supports and certain other activities. The mental health supports grant is for school districts and charter schools to expand mental health and well-being supports to youth and adolescents during summer learning programs. There's also an appropriation for school districts and charter schools to use for field trips and hands-on learning opportunities this summer. There's the appropriation to increase adult basic education program funding. The grant for neighborhood programs is for school districts, charter schools, intermediate school districts, and cooperative units to provide summer programming in neighborhoods and apartment buildings that can be used for things like transportation, academic enrichment programming, mental health services, et cetera. The summer preschool for 4 and 5 year olds, those would be for 3 or 4 star rated private preschool, or public kindergarten in-person learning programs that offer at least 6 instructional hours per day, 5 days a week, between 10 and 12 weeks. And that would be up to $4,800 per student. Summer college program for high school graduates, that's a reimbursement for public post-secondary institutions in Minnesota. For a course that the student participates in, as long as the course is post-secondary credit-bearing or a developmental course completed during the summer of 2021. The appropriation for full-service community schools, that's to establish these schools during the 2021-2022 school year. And the commissioner would select the school sites considering the effects COVID-19 has had on the community served by the school sites. There's also appropriations for math core and reading core to remediate students' math deficiencies related to COVID-19 and students' literacy deficiencies related to COVID-19. And the appropriation for after-school community learning grants, community learning programs, those are for Ignite after school. To eliminate students' learning loss related to current school year and in the summer. And there's the funding for the school link to expand the school linked mental health grants. The $6,011,000, $1 million of that would be to provide mental health supports to teachers and other staff, and $35,000 for costs associated with amending existing contracts. Madam Chair, members, and Mr. Strom will talk you through Article 2.
Okay, Mr. Strom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There are two sections in Article 2. The first of those requires the Commissioner of Education to report to the legislature by the start of next legislative session, essentially, on the use of the federal funds. There's been 3 different rounds of federal funds for school districts in Minnesota, and this provision requires the Commissioner to sum up all those amounts and report back next year on the entities receiving the funds and what requirements they schools were required to follow for each of those funds. The second section has to do with replacement of state aid with federal funds. And this section directs that if the Commissioner of Management and Budget determines that any of the federal funds that are available would be eligible to replace the state aid in this act, that those federal funds would flow in place of the state revenue and would reduce the state general fund impact of the bill by filling in behind it with the federal funds. So, Madam Chair, that's a quick summary of Article 2 of the bill.
Madam Chair, your mic.
All right, thank you for that. So I do. I would like to thank Chair Daphne and the fiscal and in-house research staff for that walkthrough of the bill. We also have representatives from the Department of Education and the Department of Human Service on the call. Are there any questions for the author or the department at this moment? We're going to open it up for questions. Okay. Oh, Representative, I'm not sure who was first, who had their hand up first, but Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to say again, yeah, thank you for the money. And I thank you for the appropriation of the dollars for school systems. Talking to my superintendents, they really are looking forward to getting some fund for our summer school program and everything. And I appreciate the fact that Chair Mary Dabney's bill actually addresses all the different areas that we may want to support in regards to finances here. My question, though, is that when we do that at a state level, we kind of determine what is going to be best for each of the communities and districts in our within our communities, and that sometimes is not the best use of funding. So if I could ask, why did you earmark all these rather than just give each school district the same amount of dollars and let them determine the best? Because in certain circumstances, what one district may need a priority on, another one may not. And so what you're doing is forcing a school district that may not have a need in a particular area or as much as what they're getting, not be able to use those funds where they could use it for something else. So it seems to be that it would make more sense to say, you know, we think on average, this is what each of the school districts will need in these particular areas. And we're going to give them that dollar amount and let them decide where it's best. So is there a rationale as to why we want to make this a one size fits all for all districts, even though they're different?
Representative Dabney. Chair Dabney, I mean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Petersburg, for the question. This is not a one-size-fits-all approach at all. In fact, what it does is, having been developed with the stakeholders, families, teachers, school staff, and leaders, it responds to the requests that they had to elaborate out what was needed across the state. And it also, the way it's set up, districts are able to request money if they want to focus in on building community partnerships because they have strong organizations in their community. They're able to do that. If you're looking to access neighborhood programs, they're able to do that. They get to choose. Think of it as a menu with a strong base of that declining enrollment aid. More than 50% of that goes to Greater Minnesota school districts, and then a menu of options that they can choose all or none of. There are also several aspects to the bill, especially the math and reading core, where that goes to the organization to provide services so that those services are available where they are otherwise would not be, or the SchoolLink mental health grants for students and staff, where again, you have to force districts to choose those options. Those options have to exist, so we make sure that they exist.
Representative Petersburg.
Yeah, thank you. You know, and I think that sounds like it sounds like it's a good deal, except this. You're requiring each school district to have to apply for all these different things separately. And my challenge is what happens if in one area it is overused, or in other words, it is over requested and there isn't enough money there, all of a sudden there's a shortage for that particular area. So whereas I certainly understand that these should all be in the mix and the menu. My question is only about why do we limit the aspects of that menu? Why not just say for all of these things, here's the dollar amount and school districts can put a request in for whatever configuration they have rather than making it separate. That's only my concern. Thank you, Madam Speaker. Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Petersburg, I think it's important that we think about this as, roughly speaking, half of the money that is available or should be available to school districts for summer learning opportunities. As Ms. Adrian's pointed out, at the bottom of the spreadsheet that the committee was provided is $97 million, so a little less than 50% of the possible available money for school districts that is very flexible to do exactly what you're asking for in terms of flexibility and local decision making. The problem is, Representative Petersburg, the Senate GOP has put a hold on those monies. So in order to achieve exactly what you're asking for, we need the Senate GOP to let the money flow. And at this point, they're not doing that.
Thank you, Chair Daphne. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm sorry, there's a train coming. I live by the track, so if you hear something. My question is about the declining enrollment revenue. Can you explain just a little briefly how that's calculated? And as I'm reading it, it looks different than what the federal government did when they did the COVID money specifically to schools, because I believe that was based more on free and reduced lunch. I'm sure there's lots of people in my district interested in how you calculate the declining enrollment revenue.
Yeah. Should it be Chair Daphne or Mrs. Adrian?
Or Madam Chair, I think Mr. Strom might be the best choice.
Mrs. Strom.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill. The declining aid in the bill compares the district's estimated enrollment for 2021 compared to its enrollment for the previous year. So it's based on that loss in enrollment between the 2 years. Right now, the February forecast is the estimate that's used to calculate that. But as district's numbers firm up, it will be whatever the actual is for the difference between those 2 years. The question you asked about the federal funds, you're right. The majority of the federal funds so far, and including under the new act that just passed, the ARP, are allocated to school districts on the basis about 90% of that money is going out on what they call ESSER. And the ESSER money is based on the Title I-A distribution to school districts. And that's primarily based on the free and reduced lunch count. There's a few other things that go into the Title I-A count as well. But free and reduced lunch is a pretty good proxy to use as how that federal money is going out. So the federal money is going out under ESSER. On that basis, the state money and the declining enrollment looks at this year's enrollment compared to last year and funds a portion of that.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so it's based on the basic funding formula, the base formula?
Mr. Strom?
It says 48.5% of that.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, that's correct. There's an existing formula in statute that continues that's 28% of the difference. And this provision in Representative Daphne's bill pushes that up to 48.5% for 1 year only. So it's really that margin. It's that difference between 28% and 48.5% that's being funded separately in this bill. And that comes at a cost right now of $29 million. Sorry. Best guess on that cost.
Okay. Representative O'Neill, any further questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think my school districts will be pretty happy about that because they didn't have any free and reduced lunch or kids, very few. They didn't get hardly any COVID money. So they're in quite a predicament right now. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that free and reduced lunch just does raise a question. My superintendent said that they are now having a record low number of free and reduced lunch applications. Is there any thought on how that might impact reimbursements to them as just a curiosity? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Chair Daphne.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Petersburg. If memory serves, first let me correct. In my response to your previous questions, I said the federal funds that were being held up by the Senate GOP was $97 million. I should never rely on my memory. It was $57 million. So I apologize for that. But we're going to go back to my memory, Representative, which is there's been a 16% drop in free and reduced price lunch students recorded in the state from last year to this. That has a lot to do with the fact that the federal government changed the way school lunches are provided this year, and there's less need for families then to file the paperwork. And unfortunately for compensatory education with funds, which every school district in the state receives, we rely solely on those applications for free or reduced price lunch services. So when you take away the need to file that paperwork, but it's the only measure you have, it's a challenge for school districts. And it's one that I think as a legislature, we need to look at whether we should have more options for determining eligibility for compensatory funding.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Byrd.
Thank you, and I agree with you because that's what I'm hearing as well. Mm-hmm. My wondering is whether or not maybe we could, for 1 year, put in some sort of averaging over the last five for those numbers so that we don't take the big dip during this year and still use it as a parameter. Just a side thought. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With the train going by, I forgot my second question. So I was looking at the preschool amount, 20 million, and I'm reading that it says for private or public. And is there any requirements? I mean, for the public, that seems pretty simple, but is there any special requirements for a private preschool to apply for the grants?
Chair Daphne?
Madam Chair, this is a governor's proposal, and with a representative from the department here, I wonder if this wouldn't be an appropriate time for them to elaborate.
Okay, if there's someone from the department who can respond, Representative O'Neill, question, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Madam Chair, my name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations at the Department of Education. And just to clarify your question so I can getting it right, Representative O'Neill, is what are the requirements for private providers to participate in providing services to these participating 4 and 5 year olds?
Representative O'Neill, is that?
Yes, Madam Chair, that was my question. And if there is a difference between the application process for a public preschool versus a private preschool, I would think there must be, but if you could just let me know what that would be.
Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, okay, Representative, thank you very much. The requirements do not differ between private or public preschool programs that are able to serve these students. They just have to be star rated through the Parent Aware program. So if they are participating in that program, they meet the quality measures. Both public and private programs participate in this Parent Aware rating system. They are able to serve these students under this program.
Representative O'Neill.
Just last question, just so I can get a scope of how far reaching this will go. Do we know how many public and private preschools are fit into that parameter and how far will this $20 million go? Thank you. That's my last question.
Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, I don't have the numbers on the actual providers that would be able to participate on this, but I can tell you that this will reach about 4,166 4 and 5 year old student or children to be able to participate in these programs. And that would average out at about $4,800 per child to participate over a 10-week program during the summer.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That explains the $20 million. I appreciate the questions.
Okay, Representative Hurtas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question is a little bit about just the amount of money with regard to the declining enrollment. I recently had a meeting with one of our school superintendents. I've got 8 school districts out in my side of town, and half of them traverse the county line and extend into other legislative districts as well. But that said, one school district is lost about 7% of their enrollment during the pandemic. I don't know if these percentages are somewhat normal or consistent across the state, but many of them, they feel, are not coming back, that they've found a new way in private schools and in homeschooling. And some of it has been the normal attrition in terms of moving and whatnot. But is this amount of money, maybe the department would know, or maybe Representative Dabney knows, is this amount of money for the declining enrollment, is that been a few years, Rep. Dabney, since I've been in K-12 finance, but this amount, is this somewhat close to the amount of students that this particular school district has experienced as a decline? Is this kind of a an equal percent of the appropriation for the biennium for K-12.
Chair Daphne.
Madam Chair, Representative Hertas, let me give you my best shot in responding to your question. It does not make districts completely whole. The expectation in the February budget forecast is that these students will start to return. As you know, I think private school education has been a declining industry in Minnesota for probably 20 years. You just look around, the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis has closed a number of schools as parents have chosen to go to the public school system and not choose the private school system. And that's not unique to Minnesota or unique to the Twin Cities. Parents are about 95% of Minnesota students historically have been choosing the public schools. So I think the expectation is most of these students will come back. And if I remember correctly, the February budget forecast projects something close to 100% return to the public school system over the next few years. Maybe not everyone this fall, but starting then.
Representative Hertas.
Well, thank you for that explanation. And I, you know, I guess I don't want to get into the weeds. We've got more questions, but thank you. I'll end it there.
Thank you. Okay, Representative Garofalo.
Representative Garofalo, we're not hearing you on the headset.
Madam Chair?
Yes, we can hear you now. Representative Garofalo.
No, this is Representative Prisha. My apologies.
Prisha, why don't you go ahead as we wait for Garofalo.
I didn't know if I know Representative Garofalo usually ends closing remarks. So I was waiting to the end. So if you're okay to recognize me?
Representative Prisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dabney, thank you. Thank you for the bill. Definitely a lot of programs in here and a lot of monies that did listen to the schools and the stakeholders. And as I talked about in committee, certainly many of the things that we would support, I would support as well. The mental health, in fact, the DE that we offered did a lot of the same and similar things that you've offered. The declining enrollment certainly goes out to the schools in a way that makes sense. I also believe that we should offer improvements and polishing and improvements. And I want to continue to do that and offer ideas that perhaps we can take up later or put out. So I'll point out a couple of things that I wish were in the bill and why I can't support this bill as in its current form. The grant forms, the grant formulas and the grants still create some bureaucracy and layers. It still creates money that's held back for MDE. And I think that there's enough staffing in MDE where many of these are pretty easy. They could have even done them without the administrative fees, but, or we could have just found a different way to distribute those. Members, all of these programs schools could do on their own. There's nothing in statute that would prevent them, say, from doing neighborhood programs if they got the money just distributed to them. So this does create a menu of programs, but it creates a subset of menu of programs and limits schools on what they can apply for versus getting the dollars directly to the schools to deal with some of the gaps in their enrollment and allowing them to choose. We will have more bites at the apple for funding down the road. There's lots of federal dollars flowing. There's lots of federal dollars available to schools. And so I don't see the need to limit that now in a grant-based program. And no surprise, I would like to see opportunity scholarships in here. I see what we're doing with the summer preschool and a difference of philosophy, but just like we send the stimulus checks right to the families so that they can choose what to do with it, by sending the dollars for the opportunity scholarships right to the parents and engaging them, especially now in a time where they've been making a lot of these choices, they've been having their kids at home and now empowering them even more to pick the quality preschool of their choice, I think goes a long way towards that family engagement. We've seen many, many communities of color that have supported that and how that brings them up and allows them to get behind the education and build that family structure. So that's one reason why I support that. The other thing that we offered in our DE that I think is missing here is the recognition of the transportation sparsity for rural Minnesota. If we're going to offer summer school programs in rural Minnesota, the transportation issue and the miles between and travel is still a large issue. And what needs to be accounted for is how we're going to get these kids to these programs, get them to the schools, and allow for them to participate so that they can make up some of that learning loss. So I would hope that that would be something to be considered in a future version of the bill. So with that, my comments are this. Representative Dabney, I've enjoyed communicating with you and working with you on this. I think you have a lot of ideas that, as I said, I would have offered, especially in the declining enrollment. There's some things that I would have added, and perhaps we can get to that point. But we are solving and we are moving to get the money to the schools, and that's a good thing. And hopefully we continue to make improvements and go forward. So with that, I won't be supporting your bill, but I'm glad to see we're working together and we're working on this. So with that, those are my comments. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the Chair of the Education Committee, thank you. That's what I meant to say.
All right. Thank you, Representative Precia. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Good. Thank you. I'll try to be brief in my questions. So first of all, I never miss an opportunity to embarrass Tim Strom from Nonpartisan Research. Everyone should know this. It's a 100% factual statement. Tim Strom is the only nonpartisan staff member at the House of Representatives who in the general public has groupies. I'm totally serious about this. It's 100% true. We had a committee hearing years ago in Red Wing, and people flocked to him after the hearing, saying, Mr. Strom, we see all your stuff online. We love the work you do. He does. He has groupies. It's 100% true. I'm not going to ask him that question, but it's you know I wouldn't lie. Chairman Dabney, you can back me up on this, right? He does?
Absolutely. Without a doubt.
Okay. So a couple of questions, and Madam Chair, this would be for Nonpartisan Research, Chair Dabney, if he wants to answer it, whoever can pick this up. What is the total aggregate total that the Department of Education is going to be getting to administer these grants?
Representative Dabney, can you answer that? Mr. Strom.
I'd throw that one to Mr. Strom, please, Madam Chair.
All right.
Madam Chair, I think Ms. Adrians and I can put a number together pretty quick for you here on the set asides for each of those grants. It may take us just a second to get that number, but if Representative Garofalo would like to move on to the next question, we can do some quick math here.
I'll do that. So Representative Dabney, when it comes to these competitive grants, is there anything that would prohibit the commissioner from giving a disproportional amount of the money to a certain geographic area or to certain school districts beyond that individual school district cap?
Representative Dabney.
You know, Madam Chair, I'm trying to remember whether there's any determining language in the bill. I'd ask staff to help out on that.
Okay, well, they're tied up on the first question. So I think one of the things you can probably expect from this side of the aisle is that it's very common for us to take these grants and break them out and to say that a certain percent goes to certain geographic areas, no less than a certain amount goes to a certain geographic area, mm-hmm. No less goes to another area. That way we just make sure, you know, that favorites don't get played. It's the way the legislature does it. So I would hope that you'd be open to that idea in the future. I won't ask you about it now, but if you could just take a look at that, I hope that would be, you can give some guidance on that. You referenced the 57 million. I read the Fed funds reports. I don't know what that's about. Can you just give us some explanation of what that 57 million issue is about?
Representative Dabney? I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, quite all right. I've been called worse. I believe I've been called worse by Representative Garofalo.
Oh, several times. Absolutely.
If I understand correctly, the $57 million is federal funds that is currently held up in the LAC by the Senate GOP. It's very broad in application, so districts would have a great deal of flexibility in how they would use that. And I'm hoping that maybe some people on this committee could phone a friend in Senator Gazelka
tonight, perhaps, and get him to open up that line of funding for school districts. Staff may have some more detailed response to help the committee better understand.
Okay.
Madam Chair, and either for Representative Dabney or nonpartisan staff, there's been, I think there's six different relief packages passed at the federal level. Do you know which one? I'm totally unfamiliar with this $57 million. Do you know which one that was?
Mr. Strom, can you respond to that one?
Madam Chair, if Bill Marks is with us, he may be the best as he attends all the LAC meetings, but I believe it's primarily the ESSER II, the Gearson ESSER II money, which was from the second round of relief. But if Mr. Marks is with us on the call, he may be the expert on this question.
Mr. Marks?
Mr. Marks is here, but I don't have the details on that one. I've seen that it's ESSER funds, but I don't have any more details than that.
Madam Chair, if I could jump in for just a second.
Adrian.
The representative or Chair Devaney was closer when he talked about the $90 million. It is, in fact, there are two pots. There's an ESSER II pot and a GEAR II pot. You know, these are all the acronyms, and it totals closer to $75 million as the amount that is under review through an LAC request.
Okay. Hey, I was not.
Do you need a little bit more detail on that?
No, Madam Chair. I have to tell you, I was not aware that was held up in the LAC process, and I follow those things. So I'll just have to do some more research on my side. So I didn't mean to factor that. I was thinking that with regard, the reason why I was concerned about it is in Article 2 of the bill, Representative Dabney, he references giving the commissioner the authority to determine if these funds would be available. You could use federal funds for it instead of general fund money. And in light of the fact of the latest federal bill that just got signed into law last week, Representative Dabney, can we just tell him to do it? Do we have to get permission from have the commissioner determine it? Because isn't the money that they passed last Friday automatically eligible for this?
Well, Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, my understanding is that the Federal Department of Education is working rapidly to get the appropriate guidance out to states and districts within the next several weeks. But I think at this point we're short of the level of detail that the good green eye shade people over at MMB require to do that, and hence the mechanism.
Okay.
Representative Garofalo.
Ms. Adrians or Mr. Strom, do you guys got a number for me on the MDE?
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, so if we include all of those little pots of grants and then also the mental health portion, it's just over $68 million. And I'm sorry, the early education, the summer preschool piece as well.
Okay, I don't think that's... Those are the size of the grant, so they get 2% of the $68 million, right? They don't actually get $68 million.
No. Ms. Andrian.
Oh, my apologies, Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo. I thought you were looking for the total, but as part of an administrative piece of that, in the riders, you're exactly right. It's 2% of those amounts.
Well, Madam Chair and Ms. Adrians, I knew the DFL liked to spend money on state government, but even by their standards, I would find that $68 million to be positively shocking. So, I get 2% of the $68 million, so roughly about $1.5 million is what we would be giving the Minnesota Department of Education to administer these programs. Is that a rough ballpark figure?
Ms. Adrian?
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, I believe the language says that the agency may use up to 2% for administration, so I'm not sure that they would require the entire amount. If the department is here and they want to comment on that, they might be more informational than I am.
Yeah, but Madam Chair, Ms. Adrian, that's okay. I know it's about dinner time here, so I don't want to keep anyone any longer. I'll make my closing comments. But thank you again to the nonpartisan staff and for clearing up the federal issue for me. Obviously, I do have concerns about the this money being used to give $200,000 to the Department of Education to administer grants for field trips. Not what I would prioritize as our number one item, Chairman Dabney. But that being said, I do think that your bill does do some good things. Obviously, with the last year has just been devastating. It's been positively devastating for learning and education for kids in our public schools, particularly those who are at risk or in an at-risk environment or at-risk schools. And we're going to spend a lot of time trying to dig out of this mess. The decisions to lock down our schools over the last year have just, the kids are the ones who are going to pay the price. So, Representative Dabney, I'm going to be voting for your bill today. I would, obviously on our side of the aisle, there's going to be some differences of opinion. Some people will vote for it. Some people will vote against it. But this is a really crucial issue. And this is one of these things along with, getting the unemployment taxation issue resolved, getting the PPP issue resolved, getting the public safety funding for the court case in Hennepin County. Those are things that need to get resolved. And it's important for us to send a signal to you that while this may not be the bill that we would put together on our side of the aisle, I believe that it's important for us to vote for it and move this along through the process. So I'll be voting yes on your bill today and count your blessings, Representative Dabney. I'll probably never vote for one of your bills ever again. So it's good seeing you, Representative Dabney, and that concludes my comments, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. I don't see any other questions, but I do want to just say to the members that we did waive the amendment deadline for this bill, but our staff did not receive any before the hearing. And so, and I haven't heard anyone offer any amendments. So let's move forward. If there is no further discussion to the bill, okay. I would like to offer Chair Dabney the last word.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. And I also appreciate that I've got, to no surprise to anyone, great staff backing me up. And so I've got several answers to questions that were raised by members. So thank you to Mr. Rudquist and Ms. Burt. Representative Garofalo, you asked about geographic distribution of the early childhood summer program money, and there is language in the bill that does exactly what you were requesting. So you can take comfort in that. I believe it was, I forget which of the GOP representatives raised concerns about transportation funding. It may have been Representative O'Neill, but the preschool and community partnerships money, as well as the field trips money, does have transportation funding included in those programs. And I think it's good to think of this hopefully as a matchup with the federal funds that have been discussed. Let's think peanut butter and jelly, where the federal funds provide funding for what we call extended time programming. Summer learning, summer school, and then this matches up with additional services on top of those traditional programs, making sure that students have not just a classroom experience, but a more well-rounded experience that I think they need at this time. They always do, but maybe more than ever. We've got an obligation as adults to step forward and make sure that all children have a chance to thrive in Minnesota. And I hope members also share the sense of urgency that I think we all need to be feeling. Districts need to have the certainty and the budget targets to be able to plan. Families need to know that there will be opportunities available to their children this summer. We need to move this bill, and we need to move it quickly through the process to the Senate and hopefully then quickly to the governor's desk for a signature. Madam Chair, thank you for the time this evening. I ask for members' support.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. What a great deal. There being no further discussion, the chair renews her motion that House File 1064 be recommended for placement on a general register. Ms. Sparkman, please take the roll.
Chair Moran?
Aye.
Moran, aye. Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Garofalo, aye. Representative Albright?
No.
Albright, no. Representative Becker Finn?
Aye.
Becker Finn, aye. Representative Bernardi?
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Representative Eklund?
Aye.
Eklund, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Hassan, excused. Representative Hertos?
Chair Dabney, you had me with peanut butter and jelly. I vote aye.
Hertos, aye. Representative Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Johnson?
No.
Johnson, no. Representative Kreisha?
No.
Kreisha, no. Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly?
Lilly,
aye. Representative Mariani?
Mariani, aye.
Mariani, aye. Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, aye.
Marquardt, aye. Representative Miller?
Miller, no.
Miller, no. Representative Nash?
Nash, no.
Nash, no. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Nelson, aye. Representative Noor?
Noor, aye.
Noor, aye. Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, aye.
O'Neill, aye. Representative Pulowski?
Pulowski, aye.
Pulowski, aye. Representative Petersburg?
Aye.
Petersburg, aye. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, no.
Schumacher, no. Representative Schultz?
Aye.
Schultz, aye. Representative Scott?
No.
Scott, no. Representative Sundin?
Aye.
Sundin, aye. 21 ayes and 7 nays.
So there have been 21 ayes and 7 nays. The motion prevails, and House File 1064 is recommended for placement on a general register. Thank you, Chair Dabney, for this bill. Our students and our parents and our leaders and our administrators have been asking for this. So thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
So members, we will be meeting at least twice next week. On Monday, we will meet at our normal time to hear bills and possibly receive an update on the content of the federal stimulus package. We will also be meeting on Tuesday evening at 5 o'clock to adopt this year's budget resolution. We will send an outlook invitation for both hearings after this meeting and provide more information about the agendas as it become available. And with that, we are adjourned.